Breaking into the dawn chorus there. Hello everyone and a very warm welcome back to Footprints. Today is International Dawn Chorus Day. It takes place on the first Sunday of May every year, and this year is Sunday, May the 5th. It's a worldwide celebration of nature's greatest symphony, and we wanted to celebrate the birds of Bath and their incredible songs. One of the main reasons that they sing at dawn is that it's quieter then. The air is usually very still, and birdsong's been shown to carry 20 times further at dawn. And remember, you don't have to head out to a nature reserve. You can always just open your window and listen. Or you can settle down with this episode, where we'll take you on a walk to identify some of the more common birds of Bath with Marika Kovach. And we'll hear from a local peregrine specialist, Ed Druitt. But first, let's start off one very early morning, just behind Sydney Gardens, with an expert bird listener, Lucy Starling, who was keen to find out whether a pair of sedge warblers had returned to nest in the Bathampton Meadows.
Yeah, the sedge warblers I discovered in lockdown. I call it my sedge warbler ditch, sandwiched in a field between the River Avon and the canal and the railway line. And they do pass through Bath on migration. They're summer migrants. They come in from Africa. And to my astonishment, hearing one singing, I think it was the 10th of April 2020. And then I went back repeatedly to the ditch, and the male was singing vigorously. It did song flighting, which is fantastic. And I thought, you're on territory, you've got a mate. And they bred, they came back, they bred in 21, they bred in 22 and 23. I haven't yet encountered any sedge warblers in my ditch yet, but the winds have been northeasterly. There's still migrants coming in. So, fingers crossed. But even if they're not there, there's plenty of other lovely, lovely song.
Well, let's go. Let's see what we can find.
I'll go this way, I think.
So Bath is waking up. We've just walked up Beckford Road, turned left, opposite Sydney Gardens, turned left, and we're now walking out of Bath along the Canadian Canal, above the railway. And all in front of us is a misty morning.
Misty morning. We can see just the top of Salisbury Hill.
Yes.
But the mist is lingering in the valley over the over Bathampton Meadows. But it's a calm morning, which is good for birdsong.
So tell me a bit about yourself, Lucy.
Some people are intrigued about my name, Lucy Starling. Well, that's not my name, as it were. I changed it by deed poll. And I did think about Lucy Lark, because I love all larks in the world. They've got wonderful songs. But I also like starlings, and there are many species of starlings within the starling family. But I love a starling murmuration on the Somerset Levels. They're rather gregarious birds, a bit gabby, chatty, a bit bossy, and I thought, well, that will do me. So Lucy Starling I am, and it's very appropriate for a birder. I'm musical, come from a musical family, and I just love listening to birds. I'm rather obsessed with it. I'm very attuned to noises around me, and I do a lot of bird watching, or we call it birding, with my ears. We're going to veer off left now.
Oh.
Yeah, and head down to Old Grosvenor Bridge. And there's some tinkly goldfinches just on the other side of the canal. A jumble of high-pitched, tinkling, whizzy, wheezy notes. Sparkling, a sort of sparkling sound, I always say, if you want to put it into words, human vocabulary. We have a blackbird singing on our left. Male blackbird with its yellow eye ring and sparkling yellow bill.
Tell me about the blackbird and why you love it so much.
The blackbird takes me back to my childhood in Dorchester, Dorset. Perhaps a Sunday evening, father cutting the lawn, and blackbirds singing in our garden. We had quite a large garden. And I think the blackbird has this wonderful warbling, soft, perhaps slightly melancholic song. It does mimicry. It will pick up human whistles. Oh, here comes a train. Let that pass. Oh, that bird's having a preen.
He's totally unconcerned by the train.
But a dawn, you know, great tip, teacher. But as I said, the blackbirds have such variety, and how these birds compose their song, because it is a bit like Beethoven, for example, a great composer, composing a string quartet and having a motif going through those movements in that string quartet. And the blackbird near me at the moment will start off with some distinctive notes, and he'll bring these notes into the song over a period of minutes, and then he'll twist them around, and a bit like Eric Morecambe, I'm playing all the right notes but not necessarily in the right order. And it's just fascinating to listen to. As I said, I'm a bit obsessed with it, but it is so beautiful.
So have you worked in natural history and birding, or have you?
No, Pommy. I've been a civil servant all my working life in various departments. Ah, great tit. Teacher. Great tit. And we now have a wren joining in the mix. You know, Dad used to take me out to look at nature. We joined Bath Natural History Society after a wryneck, which is a sort of woodpecker, a vagrant, often comes in the autumn, turned up in our back garden in St Winifred's Drive. And my mother says, Lucy, there's a strange bird in the back garden. I crawl up the stairs, look out of the window on the landing, and I thought, what is that? I have one field guide, The Hamlin Guide to Birds, Britain and Europe. And I flick through and I find this wryneck, this sort of woodpecker, and we thought, well, we need to report it, it's a rarity. Yeah. And we go down to the library, we find the existence of Bath Natural History Society. I went to school, and two gentlemen turn up at the door asking my mother, could they either come to verify the wryneck? And of course they verified it. And then of course I got to join Bath Natural History Society. I was so excited. It was just extraordinary. And then I was quite shy as a child and nervous. I then started coming out of my shell because I suddenly started speaking to people who wanted to talk about birdsong. It was an extraordinary moment. And here I am now doing a podcast. I've been president of Bath Natural History Society for 4 years. And I've been leading field trips and writing and giving little talks, birdsong and things. And there we go, it's my life. And yes, that wryneck, 1972, seminal moment. The bird to turn up in the 6 of Winifred's Drive and kick-started everything.
It was coming for
it you.
It
was coming for me. Ah. It's a chiff-chaff, it's a warbler, a leaf warbler, so it's basically a greenish bird. So birds are named maybe after their plumage, after their habitat, their song. So the chiff-chaff, its song, chiff-chaff, 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 chiff-chaff. The rhythm is a bit like a great tit, but it's not quite that rich bell-like tone. It's a different, slightly different tone. It might be a slightly different pitch.
Through?
Yes, please. There was no internet, apps, CDs, videos. I learnt in the field, and I learnt from other bird listeners, bird watchers, birders. I actually went to evening classes when I was in the sixth form, and the only aid I had was listening to a 33 revs per minute vinyl record called The Tapestry of Birdsong.
So we're now down into Bathampton Meadows.
So some birds will nest in a bush or bramble shrub, just maybe only a foot or two above the ground. Some will nest higher up. Some birds obviously nest in holes in trees. We have a dunnock singing on the right, the little cichlid notes on my right. So often I might sing a bird, put it into human parlance in a way. So I often say to people the first bird to learn, which you could easily in February, is a dunnock, the hedge sparrow. And that will come into your garden and often beneath your bird feeders. So if I sing a dunnock, "Hi, little dunnock, please listen to me, please listen to me. Hi, little dunnock, please listen to me, please listen to me." So it's a little cyclic, rhythmic, quite even, doesn't start quietly or get loud. It's the same sort of decibels throughout, a few seconds long of this cyclic, rolling notes. So, so different from the more erratic warbling of, say, a blackcap. I'm a little dunnock, please listen to me. We are listening. This is the ditch. So there's the bypass in the background. You've got the big pylons. So this ditch is full of water. There's bramble, hempergrimony, sedge.
And they're migratory birds.
They're migratory, so they come in to breed and then they depart. They might have two broods.
And they come at this time of year,
come up,
April.
They start, migration starts even in March, April, May. You know, our swallows are coming in, house martins, swifts, there's a few swifts locally now. The last, as I said, 20, 21, 22, 23, these birds were here by now, territory, you know, eggs down. Migrating birds have so many hazards now, Pommy, going across the Sahara, all sorts of things. As you know, that they still get shot. Sicily, Malta, Cyprus. Well, that's sad if my sedges aren't back. Maybe next year, who knows.
Was it one pair you had?
I just
had
one pair in here and certainly 2 years ago they had two broods. It was lovely to actually see the young birds. I stared at this dish so often. It didn't take me long to get here from home and I just used to sit, stand, and I could tell from the behaviour, I could see the adults with food in their bills and I thought they were youngsters, but it's great because there was so much cover. So I just bided my time and then one youngster just popped up and that was, oh, I was so happy.
You mentioned how, you know, difficult September is because the birds stop.
Yes, it's
singing.
A quiet period.
So what is it like for you when they start up again?
Oh, the joy in March, and often I pick it up by call when I hear that lovely buzzy note of a sand martin. That's sometimes the first migrant I will encounter in March, roughly 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th of March. And the buzzy sand martin noise. I could be on the coast somewhere, I could be on the Somerset Levels, Avalon Marshes. And it's a thrill every time.
Your face has lit up thinking about
smile.
It all.
I always do because, yes, you know, beam me up, Scotty, just get me down there, really. And I'm in my element. You know, a dawn chorus, it's International Dawn Chorus Day on Sunday, the 5th of May. And so you could go to somewhere like the Avalon Marshes, the RSPB Reserve, Ham Wall, and you could have the basso profundos of the operatic world, the booming bitterns, right up to the virtuosity of the contralto singers of the Chetty's Warbler, and everything in between.
Thanks so much there to Lucy Starling. Lucy has recorded walks which you can find on the Bath Natural History Society website, bathnats.org.uk. And there you can also discover more about their meetings and workshops. Next up, we have Ed Druitt. His website lists him as a naturalist, author, tour leader, birder, photographer, public speaker, bird ringer, zoologist, feather expert, and he's currently studying for a PhD based on researching peregrines for the last 24 years. But before I asked him about them, I wanted to hear what the Dawn Chorus meant to him.
Yeah, the Dawn Chorus is just a wonderful time of the year when everything is all singing at once. It's all saying, this is my patch to other male birds, keep out. It's, you know, for the birds, it's probably quite a stressful environment. But for us as human beings, it's a very peaceful, I say peaceful, I mean, it's a noisy time in the morning, but it's very peaceful in the sense that because we're connecting with nature and listening to it, it's very peaceful for us to relax with and enjoy. The birds that are going to be singing are your small garden birds, your perching birds, really. So this is everything from your robins and wrens and blackbirds, you know, up to sometimes even things like magpies and jays will sing. They tend to mimic other birds more to try and impress their partners and things like that. But some female birds do sing. There are female robins that sing in the winter. There are female dunnocks and bullfinches and Chetty's warblers that will sing. But on the most part, in the Northern Hemisphere anyway, and you know, Bath included in that, it is the male birds that are either singing to attract a mate or they're singing to say, this is my patch, this is my territory, to other male birds of the same species. And so they're trying to make sure that their nest, their eggs, their female is kind of protected from being mated with, really, from other rival males. And actually in Bath, for birds like song thrushes, blackbirds and robins, this actually may start as early as November, December time. So actually by the time we get to April, May time, they're already breeding, nesting is already in full flow. But for migrant birds just arriving in Bath, such as swallows and house martins, blackcaps and chiffchaffs and white throats, they've been abroad, you know, they've been in different parts of Africa. So for them, it's about when they are getting here in April, May time, around the time of the International Dawn Chorus Day, then actually for them, it's about mate choosing. It's about saying, look at me, I'm an amazing male bird, and they're attracting a mate, or they might be kind of rekindling a relationship with a female from last year. So for them, it has to happen on a much quicker, shorter period of time. They haven't had all winter to sort of be doing this.
So tell us what birds we may be seeing coming back to Bath after a journey south.
Yeah, so if you're in the middle of Bath, if you're in central Bath, then it's going to be birds such as the chiffchaff and then the blackcap, which is a robin-sized bird, greyish colour with a black cap in the male and a brownish cap in the female. And they will be all over gardens and parks along with the chiffchaff. The blackcap has a very beautiful, fluid, fluty song. It almost sounds a little bit like a blackbird, kind of speeded up. And once you, as you go out of Bath, where you've got hedgerows, you're going to have birds such as white throats. A small robin-sized bird with a white throat, which often sings from the hedgerows, for example. And around your farms, particularly, you're going to have your swallows, and in villages, your house martins. But in the middle of Bath, there's also, particularly at the beginning of May, going to be swifts. And swifts are only in Bath for 3 months of the year. And they're a large bird with long, curved, pointy wings, and they scream low over suburban Bath, and they'll be nesting in holes under the eaves of buildings across the city.
Oh, we love it when the swifts come, don't we? Because they mark the start of summer, do you think?
They do, absolutely. They're only here for 3 months. They arrive end of April, beginning of May. You'll get hundreds of them down at Chew Valley Lake feeding on insects, particularly in poor weather, and then they'll be coming back to their nesting locations in Bath itself. Come July, and certainly by the beginning of August, they're already making their journey back to Central Africa, believe it or not. And even sometimes as far east as Mozambique, which is on the east side of Africa, the African continent.
So they have a long way to go, right over the Sahara. How do they manage that? How do they have enough food?
Well, birds are really good at laying down lots of fat, and they can metabolize fat very, very quickly, but also they can put lots of it down. They pack it all around their breast muscle, around their organs, and they will then use that fat. So when they have to go over the Sahara Desert, where there may not be many insects to feed on, they'll be using that fat to allow them to do that journey. And very often they'll do that journey in one go. The unique thing, though, about swifts and some of these other insect feeders, though, of course, is that they can feed on the go if they need to. Unlike a bird like a blackcap or a whitethroat that needs to feed on little caterpillars and insects in bushes, There's lots of what we call aerial plankton in the sky. These are insects and small spiders just floating around in the atmosphere. And of course, birds such as swifts are very good at feeding on those sorts of foods. They've got a big mouth and they can sort of just vacuum up those insects. So, you know, swifts in particular are good at kind of doing that on the wing. But the smaller birds, which will be migrating here at the moment, such as cuckoos, for example, and white throats and black caps, then they'll have to fly over the Sahara in one go because there's not much there. But then when they get to the other side into Morocco and Algeria, they'll feed up again in the bushes, often in the mountains, and then carry on further north into Portugal and Spain. And actually, as we go through May, migration is still happening. So even when the dawn chorus is happening in early May, there are still birds arriving throughout May. And there's a bird called the reed warbler that you get around reedy ditches around Bath, on the outskirts of Bath, and also down at Trevely Lake. And some of those may carry on arriving into early June even. So migration doesn't just happen in one go in April or May. It carries on happening for many of these birds throughout the season.
And just tell us briefly about the bird populations in the world and how they're doing.
It's a mixed kind of bag, really. There are lots of birds doing well. So a lot of our generalist species are doing very well. So things like your herring gulls and your lesser papagoes, your magpies, your crows, your ravens, your blackbirds, your robins, you know, they are doing very well at the moment. We're obviously experiencing changes in our weather and climate. We know that things are warming up, and we're certainly losing some birds around Bath. We're losing birds such as the willow warbler, which used to be very common. That's increasing in Scotland, and it's actually shifting its range further north. In terms of birds that are going down, well, you know, we are losing birds such as house martins and swallows. We've got things like cuckoos that are disappearing from the countryside around Bath. And, you know, a lot of that is related to, you know, changes in food supply in the wider countryside, the intensification of arable practices and things like that. You know, we have fewer skylarks. Skylarks are still very widespread around the outskirts of Bath, but they're not as common as they used to be. They're not in the densities they are. Other birds that are benefiting, things like peregrines, which I think we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, they are doing very well in southern England. They've really benefited since the 1930s from, you know, the abundance of these generalist species in our towns and cities. And you know, most towns and cities in the West Country now will have a pair of peregrines nesting, if not just hanging around ready to breed.
Well, let's turn to the peregrines then. Just before you tell us why they like to live in urban areas, tell us about the peregrine and why it's such a majestic bird.
Yeah, the peregrine falcon is a crow-sized bird. It's got long pointy wings and is designed for speed. So it is really, really very good at chasing other birds, which it feeds on, sometimes bats, but mostly birds. And it's very famous for a particular dive called a stoop dive. And this is where the peregrine will go very high, say over Bath. It'll put its wings behind it closed and it will dive through the air to be able to then sort of glance its prey, maybe a pigeon, maybe a duck or something like that, and then it'll come back down and retrieve it. And the peregrine has forward-facing eyes. It's a predator like an owl or a lion, and so it's very endearing to us. We're very attached to wildlife that has those forward-facing eyes that are similar to you and I. So the peregrine is a bird that people love to see. It's very popular because of its speed, but also the fact that it's got those kind of facial features that we can kind of connect with, really.
I had never thought about that. That's fascinating. What do they eat? What do peregrines eat?
We often assume they eat things like pigeons, and they certainly do eat pigeons, but actually, we've recorded over 100 different species of bird in the diet of peregrines. And we've also discovered that they hunt at night. So in somewhere like Bath, you've got lots of street lights, and they, although often, certainly in the last 5 years, they've often been converted so they're directing the light downwards mostly. There's still a lot of light going up into the sky. And at night time, there are many birds that migrate, like redwings and song thrushes, but also secretive water birds such as water rails and little grebes. And what we know is that the peregrines have become very adept at being able to catch these migrating nighttime species at night and bring them back to locations such as St John's Church in Bath at night. So there's two things really that we're learning. One, yes, pigeons are important. They may make up a third to half the diet that they eat. We know that starlings are also very important during the breeding season. So when these young birds hatch, then starlings will be one of the main birds that get brought in to feed those chicks to start with, and then it will revert to pigeons. But all throughout the year, there's lots of other sorts of species: finches, thrushes, blackbirds, and warblers, and also birds such as terns and wading birds that will be brought in to feed those chicks. And then, as I say, particularly during the spring season and the autumn season, when you've got most migration happening, the peregrines will also be taking advantage of birds migrating at night over the city of Bath.
And we've got the Bath Peregrine Project. Tell us about that.
Yes, that's right. So since 2000, we've had peregrines on St John's Church in the middle of Bath by the river. They've been breeding since about 2006, so almost 20 years, 18 years now. And the Hawk and Owl Trust, which is a charity that supports habitat creation and the protection of birds of prey, of which the peregrine is a bird of prey, actually monitored this location. So the Hawk and Owl Trust have a camera on the church in Bath so that people can monitor the birds. And if you go onto the Hawk and Owl Trust website, you can actually see updates on how those peregrines are doing. Now, since 2006, we haven't got the same pair there, but we did have a bird that was ringed. We put colour rings on the bird so we can identify them under a special licence when the chicks are about 3 weeks old. And the first bird we ever ringed, AA, in 2007, he lived to about 13 years old. And then the pair we've got there now, I think, have been there for the last few years or so.
Why do they like living in cities? I mean, you said most cities in the West Country now have a pair of peregrines, but why are they attracted to cities? Why do they not stick to the countryside?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So we know that peregrines have come into towns and cities in Germany and in England over the last few hundred years or so. And actually, records go back of peregrines using Salisbury Cathedral in the 1800s. But actually, up until the 1930s, peregrines were very much a cliff nesting bird on coastlines. And this is probably because of the fact that peregrines' numbers were always being suppressed by persecution. So during the Middle Ages, you had peregrines along with other predators being persecuted because they ate other things. They just were. And there was often money to be had to be able to kill these things. Then during the Victorian period, you had taxidermy where birds were being shot to be stuffed. And then you've also had persecution because peregrines were eating maybe racing pigeons and pheasants and things like that. So it was only when we got into the sort of 1950s and 1960s that people realized that peregrines were disappearing. And then there was a link made with a pesticide, DDT. And once that link was made, DDT was banned and peregrine numbers started to recover. And in 1981, we had the Wildlife and Countryside Act, which protected peregrines. So suddenly you've gone from a bird that's been heavily persecuted and suffered from the effects of pesticides to becoming protected, having those pesticides banned and so forth. So actually, since the 1980s onwards and then into the 1990s, the peregrines really have had better protection. They've not been exposed to dangerous chemicals. So they've not only just come back to those rural haunts along coastal cliffs, they've then come back to rural quarries. And as those have become saturated, they've then pushed into the next best thing, which is kind of urban locations. So I think it's the fact that there's an affinity for towns and cities because they replicate cliffs and they replicate quarries. And because peregrines are now doing well and not being persecuted, they're becoming saturated in all those rural places. So they've now got the opportunity to come in and take up these urban locations.
And I guess if you take a pair of binoculars down to St John's, you'd be able to see them.
Yes, absolutely. So the wonderful thing about urban peregrines is that they are easy to see. You can be 20, 30 metres away from them and they're not showing any disturbance behaviour. So actually, if you stand on the pavement sort of opposite the St John's Church, you can easily watch the birds. And the nest box faces the riverside. So you can often look up there and maybe spot a bird nearby on that box.
The babies will get ringed. Now, you're a bird ringer. Tell me about that before we finish.
When they're 3 weeks old, we have a special license. We have what we call a Schedule One license that allows us to disturb the eggs and the chicks for nest monitoring purposes. And the chicks can be what we call ringed at 3 weeks old. And this is where we put a metal identification ring on one leg and we put a colour ring that has two unique letters on it on the other leg. The colour ring is nice and colourful and means it can be read at a distance from a camera or a scope. And the reason for doing this is that it enables us to monitor these birds and find out where they go. And we know that colour-ringed peregrines from Bath will move quite often into the Midlands and even go as far east as Norfolk. Female peregrines will travel further than male peregrines. This is to avoid inbreeding. So female peregrines will go as far east as Norwich, for example, in Norfolk, and also head sort of into the northeast. Male peregrines will stay a little bit closer, but even so, they could still go as far as Swindon or Oxford, perhaps even further afield than that from Bath. So it's enabling us to really get a picture of how peregrines in Bath and the West Country are helping to, I guess, disperse and increase the population of peregrines in other parts of England.
That's absolutely fascinating, Ed. Thank you so much for talking to us today about your extraordinarily expert knowledge of peregrines and all other birds.
My pleasure. Lovely to meet you.
Now it's time for another walk, and this time is the turn of the Cotswold Wardens, who offer a myriad of free walks that you can just turn up to. This one was in Marshfield, and we were joined by an expert birder, Marika Kovacs. Marika is visually impaired, so while she's guiding us about the birds, we were guiding her along the walk.
That's a chaffinch singing.
Yeah. How do I know a chaffinch then?
Because it sort of goes pew, 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 does that. If you listen, that's a blue tit.
That one's a blue tit.
I think so. It's too even to be a great tit. So I just think, yes, it is a blue tit.
There.
That's a blue tit. Want to listen to quite an unusual sounding blue tit. There. Yeah. So birds are singing. What birds are doing when they're singing, they're asking, come on, come to me, I fancy you. Girlfriend, they want to mate. And that's what the main reason is for singing, especially the dawn chorus. But also it can be territorial as well. So, but also the calls are for territorial reasons. There's a black cap singing.
What?
Just a black cap. There, on our left. And as it's sung, if you look at my hands, it starts off very closed. And as the song goes on, it kind of unfurls and the song spreads out. Now, listen carefully. And here at the end of the song, it gets kind of almost smoother, whereas at the beginning of the beginning it's crackly, then it goes smoother. Yeah? That's a black cap. Lovely. I love the sound of the black cap.
That's a black cap,
then? Yes. There's a chaffinch in front of us as well.
Is there?
Yeah.
We're on gravel now.
Yes, yeah, there is. There. And then there's a great tit to the right. That's the chaffinch. And then behind, that's the great tit. And that's the chaffinch. And that's the great tit.
Oh, that's fantastic,
Yeah. Oops, sorry.
That's a crow.
Yes, it is.
Right, now we've got a crossing gate, so
okay.
I'll go first.
Yeah, you go first, and if you then hand me the top of the kissing gate.
It's spiky.
Oh, I got it, yeah. Oh, it's quite a nice kissing gate. We're just listening to a great tit at the moment. It's just behind us, and when it... Years ago, about 2001, I was studying at the Royal National College for the Blind. I came back as an older student, and I saw this email, and it said, this weekend, there's the opportunity to learn birdsong. and two people were coming from the, I think it was probably the ornithological club or somewhere like that, or the BPO or somewhere like that, coming to the college to teach students, if they wish to, birdsong. And I thought, oh, I don't like staying at college because I like to go home weekends. But I had this instinctive feeling that I thought, I've always wanted to know what all the birds are when you go outside and you just listen, you just hear this absolute cacophony of birds and you don't know what one's doing what. So then I decided, actually, I really do want to do this. So I decided to stay the weekend, and that basically was a life changer. We met up and we sat in a room, first of all, where this very nice person played these tapes to us. And these tapes were actually narrated by Penny Gore, who's a wonderful Radio 3 presenter. And they were called Teach Yourself Bird Song, or Bird Sounds. And we were all given the first two tapes, and I listened to them, and I just made sure that I knew them all by the time we went out. It just kind of took off with me, and I just absolutely loved it. And I remember that the guy who came down to do the talks kind of, because I was so keen on it, he kind of took an interest in me and took me out for an extra walk in the evening where I heard bats and owls. And he said, I've only got one set of the rest of the tapes, but I'm going to give them to you because I can see that you're going to be the one who's going to benefit from them the most. Wow. So he gave me the other eight tapes, which was really kind of him. Oh, there's jackdaws on our left. Oh, and there's a chaffinch still there as well. There's a jackdaw as well. Jackdaw. And now we can hear a chiff-chaff. Chiff-chaff, chaff-chaff, yeah. In front of her there. Chiff-chaff.
Skylark. Yeah.
It's a skylark,
isn't it?
Skylark, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes, there it
oh.
is.
Oh. I can't see that. It's lovely. I love the sound of the skylarks.
My glasses are coming.
Right, we're back at the cars.
Ah, I sort of heard Arthur's voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your expertise.
Yeah, not bad.
Thanks for your time, Marika.
It's been nice to meet you, Rob. But thank you very much. It's been great to meet you as well. Yeah, lovely. Yeah. Hope I meet you again. We can walk again sometime.
Yeah.
Thanks so much to Marika there for inspiring us to get out and listen to the birds. And you can find out more information about the Cotswold Wardens free walks in the programme notes. Well, that's it for this episode of Footprints. Thank you for joining me. Don't forget you can listen to all previous episodes anytime you like. And please share as widely as you can with friends, family and colleagues. And for more information on Bardscape, visit the website bardscape.co.uk. Thanks go to the National Lottery Heritage Fund and players of the National Lottery for supporting our work. Footprints was hosted and produced by me, Pommy Harmer, and I'll see you next month.